I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, please.
Gaylor?
Here.
Grunch?
Here.
Meadhammer?
Here.
Sansom?
Here.
Town?
Here.
Quorum present.
Okay. As we begin our meeting tonight, we would like to take a moment of silence, a moment of prayer. How are you feeling in your heart to honor Gretchen Crum? She was a city employee for 3.5 years, from 1995 to 1998. And she served on the Planning Commission since, I believe, 1999. And she has been our co-chairperson, or vice-chairperson, for, I believe, for approximately a year. But anyways, if we could just take a moment of silence and give thanks. May God be good to her and grant her peace. Our first item of business today is the consent agenda, and is to expedite business by grouping non-controversial items together to be dealt with by one commission motion without discussion. Any member of the commission, staff, or the public may ask that any item or items on the consent agenda be removed and placed as the last item under new business to receive full discussion. Such requests will automatically be respected. And tonight we have 9 items listed here on the consent agenda. This is a this is the commission approval. It needs everybody's consent. You have something, Derek?
Oh, just a question, Mayor, on the reappointments for Compensation Commission and Historical Commission. Was there any additional applicants to those positions, or was it strictly the individuals that were already serving?
We advertised in the Gazette for those positions, mm-hmm. and there was no.
Very good. Thank you. That's all.
Okay. Anyone else? Any citizens? Okay, I'll call for a motion for the consent agenda.
I'll make a motion to approve consent agenda as presented.
Second.
Roll call, please.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, next item of business is hearing citizens' comments on non-agenda items. And please hold your comments for 5 minutes. Please identify yourself if you do wish to address the commission. Do we have anyone in the audience tonight that wishes to address the city commission on a non-agenda item? Okay, I see no hands, so, Mr. Hartwell.
Thank you. A few years ago, when Chuck was mayor, and Michael was here, there was a discussion about the my property that is close to Waterworks Building, and the fact that for maybe 900 days, or I've had it for about 20 years, at least 3 years of that time, there were trucks, piles of gravel, piles of pipes and everything always on my side of the line, quite deep into it. When there seemed to be enough space for it on the other side, I would ask that it wouldn't be done, but it just kind of slipped out of the hands. Hotchkiss and Duna didn't help. And so on. And so we were talking about a quid pro quo, which would be the electricity and the water at the house that is on the property that was always being infringed upon. And Michael Caine was nice enough to walk me through the electricity part, and now it comes to the part where turning on the water. Now the water turning on there is probably no easy feat, because in the recent time, this has happened, if you show him, there's been a flood where the under the house where the pipe comes up and where the valve is, that's all filled in with dirt and muck and stuff like that. So it wouldn't be so easy to do. And I just wondered if I have your support in having that water turned on by the city, even though it won't be easy without a cost to me, as part of the quid pro quo, which you could never repay me for 300 or 600 or 900 days of people using my property. Sometimes they rent it, or sometimes they put a driveway in there for the use of it. In this case, Mike helped me with the electricity. He knew who to call and what to do, and we got it solved fairly quickly. The line had been knocked down between it and had broken between the waterworks building over the property on the way to my place. So it looked like some, at least the waterworks building had something to do with it. And in this case, the flood and the old nature of my water main there and so on, because it could have been the first one put in 1898. It's a candidate for that, because that's when the first pipes were put in. So anyway, that's what I'm bringing up. Is it possible for the waterworks and the city to take care of putting my water on? I have a shut-off valve under the floor that, you know, you just turn it on to that point, and then I cut it off before it flows into the rest of the building. So there's a point where you can cut it off after it's on.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Have you been in to see Andy and Mike since this flooding? We had all this rain here in the last few days, or?
No, it didn't. Okay. It didn't do it this time.
Okay.
After flood, the city fixed the drain well. Although the creek is up 4 inches, it hasn't flooded. But that was quite a lake there.
Okay. Well, so we'll refer this to Andy and Mike and follow through on it for you.
Okay, I see Andy back here.
Yeah. Do we have anyone else tonight that wishes to address the commission? Okay. Next item is correspondence. I do not have any to share tonight. Is anyone else in the commission?
No.
Okay. At this time, we're going to have our city manager's report, but before we do the report, we're going to do a presentation. We have a commitment, or a contingent, I should say, and of citizens here that really did a yeoman's job of cleaning up our Civil War statue at the cemetery, providing lights for it, lighting the flag, lighting the statue, and it's really an honor to our city to have volunteers like you folks. And when we were addressed at the previous meeting, we asked that we could have some of the volunteers join us tonight. We'd like to pass out some certificates of appreciation. So anyone that was involved in the the cleanup and the project, if you could step forward, we would like to make some presentations to you. And also, we'd also like to acknowledge our local companies that provided goods, services, and time to make this possible. We have an appreciation certificate for Ace Hardware. We also have one for Ed's Electric. And the Charlevoix County News. So, if you folks could come forward, we'd like to present these appreciation certificates to you. Excuse me, I forgot the first name.
Norby.
Right.
That's okay, most people do that.
All right. So,
you want to read one, Ron? You want to read one?
We could. Mm-hmm. We can read this in. The City of Boyne City presents these certificates of appreciation for your role as part of the team making improvements to the illumination and appearance of the Maple Lawn Cemetery Civil War Memorial. Your service to our community salutes those who served our country. Presented on this 8th day of October, 2013.
Encourage anybody that hasn't been by there, either day or night, to take a trip out there. Mm-hmm. The meeting's over with. It's getting dusk now. The lights will be on. To see how the statue shines now that it's been cleaned. It's like it's brand new. The marble, it's like a mirror finish on the base. Mm-hmm. It's very impressive. So I think everybody should take a look at it if they haven't been out and seen it. And it's now clearly visible both day and night.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. And before Mike has a chance to do his city manager's report, we'd also like to do a presentation to you, Mike. And anyways, this is from the International City Managers Association, in honor of 30 years of service to local government. It's presented to Michael Kane. He's recognized for his significant contributions and achievements in the advancement of local government administration. Presented at the 99th International City Managers Annual Conference in Boston, in New England,
I appreciate the tombstone black color of the plaque they give you. I don't know if it's going to get that old, they give you something of that nature. It's hard to believe that over a third of my career in city management has been here in the city of Boyne City. And I mean, enjoying it, and hope to accomplish a lot more in the future.
Thank you, Mike. Why, certainly.
I just wanted to let people know that, you know, between the American Legion and the American Legion Auxiliary and George Lasseter and Ed's Electric and Ace Hardware, this project of the statue would not have been able to have been done. And, you know, with those people, you know, and then there's other people too, but they don't want to be mentioned. But the gratitude that I'm lost for words because of the fact that you know they really stepped forward to help with this project. You know, and the other person is Andy with the city. You know, he worked with me and he did a fantastic job. And I really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ron. And a thank you goes to Andy also.
Yeah.
No thanks necessary, Mayor.
Mike, are you ready?
Yes, whenever you are.
Okay.
A few items to update the commission and the community with regards to. Since our last city commission, our motion for reconsideration, looking for a clarification and or a reversal of the circuit court's recent ruling on the Kirkland matter, had been denied. We were also informed last week that we were not successful in our place plans grant application for Sunset Park. That was approved as a last-minute addition to our last city commission meeting, although I thought we submitted a very competitive request. We are again trying to learn what we could have done to develop a more successful request, and Andy's working on that. Last week, Hugh Conklin, Jim Bauman, and I were speakers on our experiences with Team Boyne, for the statewide Creating Entrepreneurial Communities conference that was held last week in Marshall. The session seemed to go over very well, and we continued to hear very positive comments from those in attendance about Boyne City. While we were there, we also undertook some business recruitment. The Boyne City Fire Department, in conjunction with other area departments, will be holding a training burn, weather and other conditions permitting, of a house on the southeast corner of Pleasant and Trent Streets. The fire is scheduled to start, this will be Saturday morning, with crews on the scene until the burn is complete. The house is in a severe state of disrepair, and the owner approached the city about the possibility of the burn to help with its removal. Citywide leaf pickup begins this coming Monday, the 14th, and will continue for property bagged leaves on Mondays and Fridays through November 8th. Our annual free pilot safety training seminar, which is conducted by the Michigan Bureau of Aeronautics, will be held at the Boyne City Airport Terminal next Tuesday, the 15th, at 6 p.m., and it is open for the entire public. Tuesday, the 15th, is also the final day for full marina operations this year. Our community garden is expanding again. Another 9 free garden plots have been added for next season, bringing the new total to 36, of which 7 are currently available. For more information on our community garden or to reserve your part of the patch for next year, contact Pat Haver here at City Hall. The Boyne City Public Schools is finalizing their plans to build a segmented wall to help stop or slow vehicles that cannot stop on their own when coming down Fall Park Road towards M75. I'm sure the community is well aware that we've had a couple incidents and we've been fortunate up to this point that nobody's been seriously hurt. They'll be using decorative concrete blocks similar to that used on the sports dugouts with trees or shrubs between each wall segment. I do have a copy of their concept plan if the commission would like to see them. The free horseback ride for kids that were between the ages of 7 and 17 that were supposed to be held this past weekend have been rescheduled for Saturday, October 19th due to the poor weather that we had last Sunday. The rides are scheduled to be held at 10, 12, 2, and 4 p.m. that day and are available for the first 24 people who sign up on a first-come, first-served basis. And to sign up, people should contact here at City Hall. If you have any questions on these or other items, I'd be glad to address them. The commission may also notice we've got a little bit more complicated visual aid thing, kind of experimenting with different places that we could locate, either using these types of screens or flat screens in the future, for not only for us to see better, but for the audience to see better as well. So this is kind of just an experimental thing. Mm-hmm. I'd like to get feedback from people on the placements as we go forward. It is a little bit noisier since we have two of the monitors or the projectors running. If that's a problem, let me know and I can turn one off.
Thank you, Mike. Our next item is the reports of officers, boards, and standing committees. And tonight we have draft minutes for the Main Street Board, Park and Rec, the EDC, and the LDFA, Historical Commission, Planning Commission, and Airport Advisory Board. Do we have any questions from any of the commissioners in regard to the minutes? Everyone good with it? Okay. We'll move on. Unfinished business, we have none tonight. Our first item of new business is for the Lexmar Corporation Industrial Facilities Exemption Certificate Request. Public hearing and consideration to approve the recommendation from the Economic Development Corporation Board to approve a 12-year industrial facilities exemption from the Lexmar Corporation and authorize the city manager and city clerk and treasurer to sign and submit the documents necessary to execute the abatement as requested. So at this time, we will open the public hearing at 7:22. And Cindy, are you handling the summary on this? Or
I'll be glad to, Mayor.
Okay.
You have in your agenda packet the third tax abatement request we've had in the recent months. We've had some earlier, about a month or so ago, from Precision Ed and from Classic Instruments with regards to reinvestments they were looking in their facilities. Tonight we're considering a reinvestment that Lexmar is looking to do in over $15 million, a little over $15.5 million of machinery and equipment to their facility. This was reviewed by the EDC group. They reviewed the criteria, which looks at job creation, the quality of the jobs, the type of facility that they're putting in, whether it's cyclical, things of that nature, and went through the scoring category, and based on all the criteria and the scope of the investment they're looking to make, they felt this rated the full 12-year abatement, which is the maximum that's permissible under law. The project will be evaluated every 2 years to make sure that they fulfill their pledges. And we've noticed this to all the taxing agencies that are affected by this this abatement request. So you do have the request from the EDC and from staff that the City Commission approve a request to Lexmar Corporation for a tax abatement for a period of 12 years and authorize myself and the City Clerk Treasurer to sign and submit the necessary documents. If you have any questions, I do that to answer them. We also have two representatives, including the plant manager from Lexmar, with us this evening.
Thank you, Mike. Grant, could you introduce the plant manager to us?
I'd be glad to.
And if you gentlemen would like to speak to the commission and to the audience, we'd appreciate it.
Sure. First of all, this is Charlie Siska. Charlie's our general manager.
Hello. How are you?
And my name is Grant Hartenchak. I'm the controller at Lexmar. So just as an overview of what we have going on, the times have changed a lot in the last 5 years, from the 2008 and 2009 time frame, and the economy was, you know, really struggling, and Lexmar felt the challenges as well. We have since stabilized, as a lot of the economy has, and our business is strong right now. And in the last few months, we've been very fortunate in reaching through our customers and in acquiring some pretty significant new business for the next 5 year time frame. And our business is very capital intensive. For those who may have relationship with Lexmar, I've been through it, you know, that we have a lot of equipment there. And that's part of the expectation that we have from our customers is we make, in order for the mass production that we do, we have to make some pretty significant investments. We're buying some molding machines, three to be exact, and a lot of the support equipment that is required to manufacture the product that we've just been awarded through our contract. So we're looking to come to the city in this very tight competitive market that we work in every day. We've asked for an abatement to assist us in our operations to continue to make sure Lexmar and all the employees were there continue on. So.
Very well said, Grant. So basically, we have been fortunate. We have reached out and to our customer base, and we've expanded our customer base. But as well, our industry has become much more competitive, right? So we've gotten a lot of new work, but as well as it's become much more competitive. What we find is at Lexmar compared to 10 years ago, right? We're shipping twice as much product as we were 10 years ago. But revenue generated from that twice as much product is half, right? So we have to be consistently competitive, and we got to be after increased efficiencies, right? So a lot of our business requires a high capital. So we're pushing to increase our efficiencies there at the plant extremely hard, a lot by some new equipment. But to sum it up in a nutshell, we've been fortunate. We've gotten a lot of new business to replace some of our old business. So that's basically it, yeah.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
I have on the screen a part of the agenda packet that you have in the commission's packet. There was three pages listing the equipment that they're looking to purchase over 2.5 years. You also have their full application materials with regards to their job creation and retention. Comments?
At this point in the public hearing, do we have anyone in the audience that has questions in regards to the abatement for the Lexmar Corporation? Okay. It's 7:28 p.m. Oh, I didn't see your hand, I'm sorry.
Was Lexmar near Charlevoix prior to this?
No, Lexmar has always been in Boyne City.
In Boyne City.
Yes. And there was a Lexmar on the shoreline in Charlevoix. And they've since changed names a couple of times. But.
And Lexmar has been a good neighbor to Boyne City and an employer for, 28 years?
Yes.
Wow. That's, we're grateful, truly. Any other questions from the audience in regards to the Lexmar Corporation? Okay, at 7:29 p.m., I'm going to close the public hearing. So, do we have anyone from the staff or department heads that wishes to make comments? Okay, at this time we'll move to board deliberation of our city council. Tom, would you like to start, please?
I am very much in approval of this process. I see you're adding $15 million in investments. Approximately how many jobs, how many employees now, and how many will be added?
We'll retain about 345, and we'll add about 42.
345? That's a lot.
That's the retention. Right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Jane?
Yeah. Job retention is our number one goal here. I believe this tax abatement is a good tool we have to make this happen, then I support the recommendation.
Darren?
Thank you, Mayor. Gentlemen, appreciate being here tonight and a little background on this request. Definitely not chump change. As you said, the market tightens up. Obviously, your quality control has to go up to, and you need less errors because that's less profit. Mm-hmm. So, the Corvette stuff's still in there. So
that's correct.
They're selling like hotcakes in North Dakota. So that line should be running a while. You mentioned you got some new customers. Was the requirement to acquire some of this equipment or put it on the acquisition list as a result of the new customers?
That is
correct. And they said you need to have these machines or this process in place that you currently don't have, or is this just a refinement of what you're doing for those new customers?
It's a little bit of both, right? So depending on the product that we bid on, that we win,
sure,
dictates what kind of process equipment we need to process it. And depending on what our capacities are, right? So we make a bid on new product based on the size of the program. Depends on how much capital we need, right? So if we don't have capacity in a molding machine, we have to purchase a molding machine if we win that business.
Sure.
So some of it is kind of a little bit of both.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm definitely in support of this. As long as the application is accurate, and as mentioned already, Lexmar has been a great partner for Boyne City, and you know, the numbers that were mentioned on jobs, that's a lot of families.
Yes.
That's a huge impact on our community, and I think we should do our part to allow you to do what you do, which is make money, profit, which you can keep people employed. So I close for that. That's all, Mayor. Thank you.
You're welcome. Laura?
$15 million investment. Is that mostly in new equipment, or is it replacing some of the old?
So a little bit of both.
A little bit
of
both?
Some of it is, 90% of it is new.
Okay.
Some is refurbishing old as well.
Yeah, okay. I read through your listing, and yeah, some of it looked like it might be replacement equipment. Tom did ask one of my number one questions, but to elaborate on that, the 345, is that mostly full-time, part-time, mix?
Full-time.
All full-time?
Mm-hmm.
That's wow, that's a lot. And then 42 new positions will be?
That is correct.
Mm-hmm. Same. Wow, okay. That's impressive. I would be in full support. Yeah.
I'm also in full support. I'm going to call for a motion from the commission.
I make a motion that the city commission approve the tax abatement request for Lexmark Corporation for a period of 12 years, mm-hmm, approve the authorizing resolution, and authorize the city manager and city clerk treasurer to sign and submit the documents necessary to execute the abatement as requested.
A second.
Roll call, please.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Sansom.
Aye.
Towne.
Aye.
Gaylord.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We've had a long day. If you're welcome to leave now. You don't have to stay for the whole event.
But you're welcome to stay if you'd like to.
Why don't you like to stay? That's fine, Doug.
I'll take you up on that. Thank you.
Very nice meeting you, sir.
Yes. Nice meeting you. Thank you.
Okay, our next item of business today is the Dyer Alley vacation public hearing. And this is a public hearing in consideration of vacation alley located between Franklin Street and Lewis Street, west of Lewis Street, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents. OK, Okay, it is 7:35 p.m. We'll open the public hearing in regards to the Dyer Alley vacation public hearing. Scott.
Thank you, Mayor. As you may recall, when you saw this initial request from the Dyer to vacate the alley in August 27th, the alley is a typical 16.5-foot alley. It runs between Division and Franklin's, about 450 feet long. The alley is currently undeveloped and overgrown. No utilities or any other infrastructure is placed in the alley. The request was reviewed by the department heads of the city, and all concurred that they saw no need for the alley in the future and recommended that it be vacated. As directed by the commission at the last meeting, the public hearing was set and the notices were mailed out to the adjacent property owners. We received no comments back from anyone, so now it is brought to you for the public hearing and your consideration.
Thank you, Scott. Are you Mr. Dyer?
Yes, I am.
Would you care to address the commission at all?
I didn't know I owned the alleyway. I mean, I know stuff that I didn't realize. I have two lots on the other side of it. And my goal is, if I can get that alleyway closed, then I can run my fence line all the way through. Because there's some stuff I can't get to now the way it's set up now, but I would like to be able to go through my yard and take out my back fence and move it farther down and get to the trees I want to bring down and stuff. That was really the main issue, is getting to my property that I no longer can get to. When I bought the property, I was able to come off Division, and now I can't. And so this is the way of doing it.
Thank you.
And just for reference, I believe your house is the second one from the corner?
Yes.
So it would be this house right here at this location?
Yes.
This is Lewis Street, this is Division Street here, and the alley is shown in red. This is Burl Street a little further to the west. So he owns the property on this side of it.
Correct.
Thank you, Mike. Do we have any citizens with questions tonight in regards to the public hearing on the alley closure? Okay. Anyone from staff or department heads? Okay, Mike?
Again, one of the reasons that staff is not too concerned about this alley vacation, one, we're not using it at all currently, but there's also, if there ever was a need to extend a road further to the south, we do have Alice that basically goes up to and kind of peters out right here before it would hook up with Franklin. Mm-hmm. But there, that road right away continues all the way through. So there is alternate ways to get to properties back there if we need to in the future. And the alley, from our perspective, is redundant, really doesn't serve any other purpose. And I think this went to, as Scott mentioned, the Planning Commission as well, too.
Some time ago, we looked at you know, the possibility of, you know, work on Alice Street there, going further with it, but it's, or tying in with Franklin, but because of the elevation change there, there's quite a hill there to circumvent, so it's, it'd be difficult, but it's accessible. That's, if there's no further questions, I'll close the public hearing at 7:39. And we'll move to the commission for board deliberation. Laura, would you like to start, please?
Well, I guess I just have maybe odd question of you, if you don't mind, through the chair. Are you looking at developing that property in behind on the other side of the alley?
No,
you said removing trees.
Just setting my fence. That's a, you know, make a big backyard.
Okay. All right.
No build, you know, like a house or anything like that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. I was just wondering. Because you mentioned clearing some trees out and stuff. So.
Maybe you have. Mother Nature's taking care of that.
Oh, have some ideas for it that I might want to know what they are. No, otherwise, I don't have any other questions for it.
Just a huge
yard. Okay. All right. That's fine.
Derek?
Hey, Mayor. Mike, have we vacated an alley before in the city?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
With the new spheres?
Okay. I know we've had, I'm trying to think of specifically if there's an alley over there, you know, if there's some other locations, if there are roads or alleys. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
But we have gone through this process, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And then that property will be split down the center line and divided up all equally, and then the property descriptions will be amended?
Correct.
Accordingly with that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is there any fees regarding surveying or anything like that? How was that done, or when is that done at this point? Or
municipal application takes care of all that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, the individuals that are directly affected right there, probably Mr. Dyer, haven't commented to the negative, so.
And we went through, as mentioned in the information, there's a series of steps we have to go through with regards to notifying the public.
Yep.
There's items in the newspaper, there's postings around town, there's mailing to the property owners, we put up our yellow informational signs, we tried everything we could think of to make people know that something's going on here and that make sure they're informed.
Sure.
And have an opportunity to comment.
The fact we don't have any utilities at all there, and we do have another potential thoroughfare there with that, extending Alice, mm-hmm. that right away is there, though it's not developed yet, is another option, where this short piece just was a very small section. So I have no objections to move it forward.
Okay. I have no questions. I'm okay with the recommendation.
I'm okay with it.
I'm also okay with it. I'll ask for a motion from the commission.
I make a motion for consideration to vacate the alley between Franklin Street and Lewis Street, west of Lewis Street, and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
I need a second.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gator?
Aye.
Crunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Our next item of business is an audit presentation for the fiscal year ending April 30th, 2013. Financial statement by Ken Telsma with Anderson, Tagman and Company. And Ken, will turn the presentation over to you.
First of all, I'd like to thank the mayor and commissioner for having me here to do over the 2013 audit. Everybody knows the state of Michigan state law require that annually that local units of government have an audit of all their things on their books, like their assets and liabilities and fund balances and revenues and expenditures. And that evidence be obtained to, you know, to back up the numbers, make sure all the numbers in the books of the city are accurate. As we did that audit this year, we get outside information, like information from the banks that the city banks with, to corroborate what they have in cash. We confirm debts with different debtors of the city, receivables that they get from federal state grants. Basically just verify a lot of the financial information with outside sources and do a lot of testing of the transaction systems of the city, their ability to pay bills, receipt money in, administer payroll, do accounting journal entries, make sure everything's kind of in line and consistent with what's required on the national and state level as far as accounting principles and state laws and different rules and regulations of state or local governments. I think I'll go into next is we have some graphs here that are on a PowerPoint, kind of show how the finances of the city fared for 2013. We go to the first graph. We have all the assets of the city. One of the things that changed from last year, the balance sheet is now called the statement of net position. And last year it was called net assets, and before that it was probably just called the balance sheet. But this is all the assets of the city. Showing you got about $5 million, started over on the left, $5 million in cash. You got about $672,000 in cash that's restricted for things for bond reserves, interest redemptions with the water and sewer debt. You've got about $55,000 in accounts receivable, mostly for receivables for the water and sewer systems, as well as some other receivables like ambulance. Due from government units, $142,000, which is due from like the state and federal government for grants, revenue sharing, and such. Inventory, $49,000. Bond issuance costs of $5,000. Notes receivable of $32,000. Prepaid expenses, which are usually things like prepaid insurance. The period of the insurance can cover a different time than the year of the city, so you could get paid ahead for those things. Then you have capital assets that are not depreciated, like land and things in progress of $155,000. Then the lion's share of your assets that's left is the capital assets that are like the water, sewer systems, equipment, buildings, different hard assets of the city, which are used to provide services to the citizens. So that's the assets. Next graph shows the liabilities or equities or net position of the city. Again, starting on the left, it shows what's restricted, $641,000. Restricted are things like that's restricted for debt covenants, restricted for millages or different grants or monies that are kind of earmarked for a particular purpose, and they got to be used for those things. Then you have accounts payable, which is due to vendors, about $58,000. Accrued liabilities for things like payroll, liabilities and taxes of $9,700. Accrued interest on your debt, about $13,000. You have customer deposits for the water and sewer system, about $28,000. Bonds payable, about $6.8 million. And the OPEB liability is about $4,600. Now, with OPEB liability, the actuarial companies will crunch all your numbers of all your people in the plan that you're planning to give health care benefits for. They project all that stuff out about 30 years forward, and they figure out, you know, what the mix of people you have, what you need to contribute to that plan to be able to pay those things into the future. So there's kind of a few different numbers. They figure out a number 30 years into the future that you need for these liabilities, then they figure out a contribution to get you there over the next 30 years. Now, what this $4,600 represents is the contribution they calculate that you need to get to that liability. And I think for you guys, the long-term liability is like 300 some thousand. But they figure out what you need to put in every year for 30 years to get there. And for you guys, I think it's about 35,000. And then you already have people who are currently retired who are getting the benefit, and you're already paying those premiums. So what they do is they look at what the whole shooting match is for everybody that's going to get that benefit, what that annual contribution is, and what you're already putting in for people currently retired. And the difference is about $4,600. So you're pretty much putting in already what you need to get there over the next 30 years. So it's pretty close. And comparatively to other cities, you guys aren't too bad. Like I said, $300,000 is not too bad. The other cities that could have maybe 2 million or a million. So, and what you're putting in each year is pretty close to what you should. So it's not too bad.
That's the part where we've accrued the.
And you've also committed or assigned fund balance in the general fund too of like $200,000.
$273,000.
Right, to put towards it to make sure that it's covered as well. Then the last thing is what's called investing capital assets. That's your equity in all of your building, equipment, water, sewer systems, free and clear of debt. And that's about $14 million. Next graph is the revenues of the entire city. As with most local units, most of the revenue comes from property taxes, $2.8 million. That's about 47% of the pie. You get about $500,000 in federal sources for different CDBG grants for different projects. State revenues, about $724,000. Includes revenue sharing as well as your Act 51 monies for local and major streets. Get local revenues about $94,000. Charge for services of $1.3 million. Those are charges that the different departments charge of their location for the different services they provide. Like ambulance has their charges for services, as does fire department and other departments like police as well. Interest and rents, about $8,200. Interest for your banking and your deposits continues to be pretty low, and that's what everybody's been facing across the whole state. It's pretty marginal. And then you have other revenue, about $477,000. Go to the next graph. We have the expenses now of the entire city, breaking it into different pieces like public works, which is the biggest piece, $2.8 million. Public works covers things like the sewer, water systems, as well as the street systems. Health and welfare, $756,000, the largest part of that category, probably ambulance operations. Rec and Culture, $325,000, which includes your parks. Other expenditures, $143,000, which usually are insurances and other contractual expenses. Legislative is $18,000, that's the commission. General government, $1 million, that includes treasurer, elections, building grounds, a lot of general functions. And public safety, which is the police, was $732,000. Next graph is a three-year comparative of the general fund's revenues, showing its taxes over the last few years. You can see it's declined again this year. I think we had about a 2.2% decrease in taxable values, which equates about to the decrease in total revenues for taxes. Federal sources, again, none this year as there were none last year. State revenues, up a little bit. I think revenue sharing for you guys was up about $11,000 from last year. So you're optimizing everything you can get with their incentive plans. You know, they kind of want you to look at doing the most for your savings for your employee benefits, consolidating services, all those things, and trying to, you know, motivate you to take advantage of those things. And if you do, they'll give you a little bit more revenue sharing. Charge for services staying pretty even. Interest rentals take down a little bit. Other revenues pretty even, down a little bit from last year, hit about $410,000. Your revenues, and say, other than your taxable value, they're doing all right. But I think as we've seen all over the state, everybody's, you know, kind of taking a step back for property tax values. Hopefully, we're seeing, you know, that start to slow or come to an end moving forward. A lot of communities actually have started to bottom out with the decreases in taxable value and go up a little bit. So hopefully, that'll happen for you guys here in a few years. The next graph. Is the expenses of the general fund over the last few years, showing was spent for legislative, for general government. General government, we had quite a decrease from last year. We had savings on legal and accounting of about $23,000. Planning was down about $12,000. Assessor down about $42,000. Housing, $47,000. So quite a drop from last year for general government. Public safety was also down. We had about $21,000 less spent on the police department from last year. Public Works was down as well. We had less spent for cemetery, $44,000, I believe, and sidewalks about $21,000 less than last year. Mm-hmm. Health and welfare, pretty even. Rec and Culture, down a little bit. I think parks, we had like $19,000 less spent than 2013 than the prior year. Mm-hmm. And other expenditures down as well, from $170,000 to $143,000. The next page is the revenues of the sewer. Over the last few years, showing the charge for services, its interest income, other revenue, and capital grants. I think other revenue, we get a bit of reimbursement from Boeing for the sewer data. I think also last year, we get a little bit of money for capital improvements too. Or
there was some escrow funds to receive for future capital, yes.
Yeah, so that was kind of a little bump last year. And then there's been capital grants. I think the last time we had one of those was in 2011, a little bit in 2012, and none this year. The next graph is the expenses of the sewer department, showing the personal services, or salaries and employee benefits, contracted services, supplies, utilities. I think we had about $10,000 more spent in utilities for sewer this year. Repair and maintenance, kind of close to last year. Depreciation went up a little bit more. We had some capital assets that were completed last year that have with the system that are now being depreciated, so that's kind of bumped that up this year. As you get more capital assets to depreciate, the number goes up. Bond issue costs, pretty comparable because we've had about the same amount being amortized each year. And interest expense went from $139,000 to about $131,000 for bonds of the sewer system. Next is the water, again showing its charges. The revenues for the water system were down about $104,000 from last year. Interest income and other revenue pretty minimal. No capital grants for the water fund this year. We had about $218,000 last year. Then we have the expenses of the water fund. Personal expenses, again with the salaries and employee benefits, pretty good even the last year. Contracted services were down a little. Supplies expense was down from $55,000 to $28,000. Utilities pretty even. Repair and maintenance. $11,000 to $23,000. Depreciation expense was up from $212,000 to $257,000. And again, you had also quite a bit of improvements made to the water system at the end of 2012, too, so that added additional capital assets to depreciate, making that number go up this year. And interest expense, pretty even, $29,000 last year to $27,000 this year. And the last graph is the fund balance of the general fund over the last 4 years. We ended about from almost 2.3 million to about 2.4 million in fund balance of the general fund. That's the total fund balance. Now, we've talked about some of that has already been signed or committed for things such as the OPEB liability. I think there's some fire equipment that's been set aside for future equipment. There's also some other assignments and commitments for future needs of that fund balance as well. But I think overall, as you look at your finances, looking at everything, you know, we've talked about the taxable values going down 2.2%, which, you know, everybody's had a struggle with taxable values. A lot of the other things are looking favorable, like your revenue sharing. You've got $11,000 more than last year. Expenses, it looks like, you know, you're creating savings in different places, and like the general fund was, or the general government was down quite a bit. The public safety and police was down. So it looked like a lot of departments, there were some savings this year. Budgeting, looking at the budget for like the general fund and the street funds, you guys stayed, you know, well within the budgets. You had no deficit fund balances, so no funds running in the red. So, you know, things aren't, you know, things super great, but it's, you know, considering the economy and, you know, all these things, you guys are doing fairly well with what you have, I think. You know, you're managing, you know, revenues and living within your means. So I say that's a, you know, pretty good audit for 2013. And we always, as always, we appreciate the help of Cindy and Mike and all the employees and getting all the information together. And we put them through a lot of work gathering all the invoices and receipts and all the documentation and calling people and things. And so we appreciate their work as well. But yeah, I think financially, I think Point City turned out pretty decent this year. And I think, you know, you've got to keep doing what you're doing. It's a good thing, I think, here at Point. It seems like everybody's pretty aggressive on pursuing the different grants for things. You know, there's, I know everybody's looking at their dredging grants moving forward into next year. And it seems like, you know, they're kind of aware what's out there, and you seem to get, you know, the maximum things that you can. So that's helpful as well. Any questions about the financial statements or the graphs reflecting them or anything this year?
I have one question, and it had to do with the, you had a different name for the category, but what it's involved is the sick and vacation pay liability, and I think of all the things that's happened in some of the major cities, do you see a time where we'll actually have to accrue for that, like this, like post-retirement benefits, or they'll require cities to do that? We show 145,000 you know, potential unfunded liability out there for, you know, sick pay and vacation pay when people retire.
I don't know. I mean, I'm surprised they haven't already. Maybe they'll get to it. I mean, the OPEB and like your pension are some bigger ones, so maybe that's why they picked on those first. But yeah, sick and vacation is, you know, no matter for what size of an organization, it seems to be a good chunk of money. You know, and I noticed people trying to save money, they've reworked their policies and their plans to try to, you know, make those liabilities less. So it's, I think it's just a matter of time for it isn't, it's not considered significant enough to probably do that.
Commissioners, it's open for, you know, questions.
Yeah, I guess my only question at this point, it's quite a report. I've been through it several times. It feels pretty nice to know that we're in good financial shape overall. But I'm curious as to how we compare with other cities our size. I mean, in different categories, are they pretty much par or right on, or is something kind of tilted out of, or, you know what I mean? Like over much in one area or the other, or under.
You know, it's hard to say, you know.
Each city's a little different, but.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got the same type of things, you know, like street fund, water sewer operations. Everybody seems to have marinas. it's your tax, most of the other cities have been worried about their taxable values have stopped falling, so that's something kind of maybe unique with you guys that it's still gone down this year. Revenue sharing, you know, it seems you guys maybe are doing better than a lot of others in that way. You've been able to get a little bit more out of the state, whereas other cities seem to be taking reductions.
That offsets our taxable amount, you know, right. A little bit.
Your debt load doesn't, you know, you've got quite a bit of debt on the water and sewer system, but I think it's not as heavy as a lot of other communities have with their systems, so that, you know, that's helpful. And I said with the OPEB, you know, it's $300,000 that you got to build up to pay for over 30 years, you know, and for some cities the same size as you guys can be maybe between $1 million and $2 million, so you're definitely better shape with that. But then, you know, some of the communities that are on like Lake Michigan with a stronger tax base and things, they could be doing quite a bit better. But I think like we also do like Harbor Springs, I think their tax bill always never, I think they stopped a little bit during all this, but they never ever did fall back.
Each community is a little different. I just wondered how we are things. Kind of in a general sense.
And the companies, you know, within them and these things. Okay. But yeah, I think, you know, like I said, you guys have maintained, what I see from the graphs, is you maintain pretty steady, you know, with what your revenues are and your equities and those things, and, you know, kind of just live within your means and got through everything. So that's as much as you can ask for in these days. So.
Is there any accounting rules out there or FASB rules as far as, you know, like I think of our water and sewer department, we're speaking to that, is can the water department use sewer department funds? I mean, can they be commingled, or do they have to borrow from one another to use them? Or
Some are commingled. What I've seen is most of them were all together at one point in time, but then as they've gotten loans from rural development, they've wanted it separated so they can track their performance, I think, separately and make sure, well, because usually they'll give them a different loan or grant for each thing, and they wanted it tracked separately. As far as I know, there's any rules or accounting rules that they have to be together, there aren't any. But if you're doing business with USDA Rural Development and wanting to do their loans, they're probably gonna make you keep them separated. And they too don't like it when they're loaning or lending money to other funds, even like the water and sewer operations, because they want them to kind of be like companies standing on their own. Mm-hmm. Also, cities or townships and villages can also have ordinances that restrict the water sewer fund from giving or loaning the money out. So you've got to check your attorney's check to make sure there isn't anything wrong with that. But you know, so if you aren't doing business with rural development, you know, I think you could, you know, have them together and run as one business.
Well, both of these are run as separate enterprises, and you know, earlier in the year we, you know, for our budget discussions, we approved a 2% water rate increase. And we look at the changes in net position of the deficit of $130,000 in the water department, but a surplus of $263,000 and $263,000 in the water and the sewer storm, you know, the sewer department.
Right.
And I guess that's what, you know, I'm just maybe re-justifying the, you know, the position that we did take, you know, for being proactive. I don't believe we've had an increase for 2 or 3 years, but and I guess my question is when we use stormwater or sewer water or sewer funds for the water department, do we have to borrow that money from ourselves, or is it just transparent, we can just use it?
My reaction though would be, since those are separate enterprise funds, that they would have to be a loan agreement or something of that nature, that we just can't move it from one to the other. We can move general funds to those, those and other enterprise accounts, but I think the enterprise funds are supposed to stay within themselves.
Yes.
There's some issues too I've seen over in court cases. When you start doing that, then like there's always the public's perception of whether that's favorable or not. And two, as people are paying rates for those things, and if that money's loaned, then there's feeling of whether what are they paying for then if that money's going towards the next to help the sewer fund when they're paying water and or going to the golf course or and there's been some lawsuits about that in the last 30 years. The cities have won, some have lost when they've done those types of things. So it's it's probably something to consult with your legal counsel about doing those type of things. But I think kind of agree with Mike as far as like perception of like the public and things. That's kind of maybe a hard sell. Something else to consider too is what the staffing, a lot of the operational costs are probably the same for water and for sewer. And a lot of cities and villages will just, split everything down the middle, and maybe, something to consider is maybe looking at those expenses and picking away at them and saying, well, maybe it's not really 50-50, maybe it's 60-40 or some of these other things, and chewing up, how that's allocated.
I mean, as far as apportionment of man hours.
Right.
To balance it out.
Right.
Okay. We do already allocate based on the hours worked within the department.
So you're probably more accurate than most by doing that already then.
And that allocates the benefits as well.
Anyone else? Monopolize
seems like the water and sewers is a hot topic tonight. Basically, you kind of touched on some of the areas I want to discuss, but regarding rates and maintaining that enterprise fund, and are we on track with our current rate structure? What's your input on that? For the sake of just not raising rates to end up loaning the money out to some, for other things. I think that's something we really need to think about and look at.
Yeah, I think a big factor of that is, considering like your capital needs 5 years out and those things, maybe parts of the system are wearing out and you're going to need to fix them. And, kind of not only looking at the current term, because I think like the sewer kind of did a bit better than last year, the water didn't. Then looking at what you're going to need down the line, so you might have to do a study or look at your rates to make sure that you're sustainable over the long term.
So you're saying tie that directly to those capital needs specifically, then?
Because they're usually pretty extensive. When you're going to do those things, it's you're usually talking about the millions of dollars, and I think it's nice to have those plans so you can. Kind of build up and plan for them and kind of keep your rates maybe a steadier increases and decreases than doing something radical. Like some people wait to the very last minute until they absolutely have to do something and it could be a big increase and everybody's upset about it. And I talk about rural development, a lot of communities that deal with them and getting loans and grants, they make them raise their rates or they'll come along and at the end of the year and they get the audit and feel, well, it's not doing as well as we'd like, you guys need to raise rates and stay working with us, you're going to raise it. So it's good to kind of do these studies and these plans to consider what you need for today and the long term and try to smooth the changes.
5 years, is that a general time frame?
Some people go longer, maybe you can go 10 years.
Right. Depending on what the issue is.
What you need,
I'd like to talk about our unrestricted cash assets. I don't know exactly. It's probably grouped in there. Can you talk about that money and what we have and where our the percentage of available fund balance, what part does that make up?
Mm-hmm.
I know we carried over $1 million from last year to this year.
Right.
Can you kind of talk about that? And how long can that stay unrestricted or unallocated?
Right now, you guys have about, I think about $5 million that's unrestricted.
Right.
And that's, you know, cash of like the general fund and all the water improvements. Now, that's kind of a general rule. Like the general fund probably has the most flexibility.
Right.
It's cash. You know, it's got about almost $2.3 million that's in the general fund.
Okay.
The street cash, like the major local, like the ambulance, when you get to the water sewer, usually when that cash is in those funds and, you know, it's for the operation of the fund, it's kind of earmarked for those purposes.
I think I'm more on focusing on the general fund section there.
And then with the general fund, another point of interest, too, is when people talk about fund balance, they always say, well, fund balance is cash and they're interchangeable, and that's not always necessarily the truth. You have other assets besides cash. You have receivables. You have due from government units that are basically promises that you're going to get money down the line. You have things like inventory that aren't cash. So if we look at your total fund balance is $2.4 million, but you really only have $2.3 million in cash. So you've got a bit less cash than fund balance. Some of those, your fund balance is from other non-cash things. Another general rule with cash is usually most governments like the rule of thumb of hopefully they've got about 60 days, at least 60 days of cash on hand at all times to make sure that they have enough of a buffer or enough rainy day set aside in case something happens or they've unforeseen capital things or disasters or different things. So they've got a little bit of a cushion, so the 60-day rule is always...
Where would that put us on the... plan that rule? What should we have in there? And how much are we exceeding that right now?
Well, you have about, for the general fund, you had about almost $2.1 million in expenditures, and you're $2.3 million in cash, so you're pretty solid, obviously, in that category. So yeah, your cash position in the general fund and the fund balance is pretty healthy. For future needs.
It's very healthy.
Yeah. But we've talked about, I think a couple of years ago, we talked about, you know, it sounds like a big number, but if something happens, or if you want to put more money into your pension plan, or like you want to fund OPEB, or you want to fund the sick and vacation, you know, at least you can use that to make sure those things are covered, and maybe that gives the employees comfort knowing that all those things are safe. And, you know, and two, that you're being able to, I guess, collateralize these things, so that's a good thing to have.
Yeah, that's the question that I had. I mean,
we're
at $2.2 million, which is, I think, a compliment to our staff for being fiscally responsible and conservative, which is a great thing, and we have to balance that against our wants and our needs and our goals, our city goals back here. So, you know, the marina, the facilities, the parks, the gravel roads, you know, you have to balance that against that $2.2 million. What can that do for you in getting it working? You know, it takes cash to make cash. I mean, that's a great philosophy, and it's great to have that. At what point do we start spending that down a little bit to achieve our goals? That's...
You know, and that's the mission of every commission is to figure out, you know, what that should be and what, I guess, what the minimum is that they want to keep on hand. And they can, you know, a thing about having that fund balance is you can use the money for grant matches. And you know, we talked about you guys get a lot of grants. I mean, usually they always want you to put some of your own money in. You know, it's nice to have that and so use it for those things to, you know, like you said, spend money to get money. Two, when you have capital projects, you know, or you do streets or different infrastructure, it's a lot of money, and it's good to have money aside so you can do these things, and the effect of doing them isn't such a huge burden. I have a different city I work with that has almost barely enough cash, you know, to get by each year, and that's hurt them because now they don't have the money to go match for grants, or if there's something they want to do, they got to take out a loan. You know, so I think maybe the answer is you guys kind of have to decide what the number is you're comfortable with, you know, as what the minimum is, and then you know, if you think that fund balance could be used for other things that benefit the, mm-hmm. you know, the citizenry of the city, that's, you know, it's okay mm-hmm. to spend it for them.
So you're not going to give us a magic number, are you?
All right, well, I can. The general rule of the Finance Officers Association to the country is, I think they don't like you to go below 10-15% of next year's budgeted expenditures. So like that would be, you know, I think maybe $250,000 is what that number would be.
That's the 10% number right there.
Yeah,
right?
That's the floor.
They you got 2.2 million.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So they don't like you go below that.
You can go above, just a little below.
Right.
I've had some communities that have had a really
strong fund balance number, and maybe they, you know, they have things they needed to replace, like the fire hall or different projects and things. And it seems like, you know, there's always things that you need, or maybe you need to pay into the pension plan to get that in a better place. And, you know, and they do that, and then the fund balance, you know, kind of it can increase and decrease as the needs of the city arise, and that's, you know, that's what it's there for. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, like, you know, I'd advise being responsible, and, you know, whatever you think is, you know, serves the people, mm-hmm. That's all right to do.
Well, yeah, obviously we don't want to go on a mass spending spree and get down to just that $250,000 number. But on the other hand, you know, as a citizen, they're looking at, you're carrying that much extra mm-hmm. cash, and what are you doing with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're taxing me
right.
at rates to keep that number up there, and that discussion is already happening, mm-hmm. you know? And so that's what one of the big things I wanted to discuss mm-hmm. this evening is that range and where we should be and so forth, and maybe we need to start making some decisions on what we're going to do with that moving forward. You know, mm-hmm. For example, in the ambulance, we're paying, Mike can tell me, or Cindy approximately, how much we paid since we moved. We're paying rental, you know, mm-hmm. 20, 30 grand a year, whatever that expense is, you know, versus moving that back mm-hmm. in, where that's money we're sending away from mm-hmm. the city, mm-hmm. Where we could reallocate, mm-hmm. logistically move one department to another location on the property, bring the ambulance back, that puts the money back into the city coffers.
Right.
You know, and to me, those are types of things where that makes good sense mm-hmm. to do things like that. We, you know, mm-hmm. incremental. We have some, you know, street projects, a couple ones that keep popping up. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's time that we do have some serious discussions about that and how much we're going to keep, and, you know.
Yeah.
Because that's a big number. And, yes, we do want to have the extra, you know, emergency cash and, you know, the above the 10%. We don't want to go to minimums. We pride ourselves
right.
on strong fiscal opportunities, but for actions. Mm-hmm.
But we follow through with our facilities plans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll take quite a bit.
Right.
Take a dent in it.
Yeah.
Well, and that's what I think we worked that in phases, as we discussed.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you want to consider that and make sure that's covered. So you,
mm-hmm. yep.
Because some communities, they'll lower the taxes in a couple of years, they got to jump them back up again. And sure. you know, people don't necessarily like change as much either.
Right.
It
needs right.
to be a little smooth.
Okay. I don't have a question, but I have some comments. What I did is I compared last year's audit to this year's audit. And what I believe was overall we're in better shape than we were last year.
Mm-hmm.
There's still one thing that I have a concern about, always have since I heard about it, and that was phasing out the personal property tax.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I believe we need to lose a little caution when we start taking on these big projects.
You know, that's about 15% of the tax pie. So depending what they do with that, mm-hmm. that's definitely gonna hurt you unless they can replace it with something else. Or
mm-hmm. absolutely.
But what was that number? What was the final number for us that we
200
didn't get this year? reduction. Do you know what that is, Cindy?
About, what was the 2.2%, the actual number?
Something like that. Yeah, it was a small amount, but...
What does that net number turn into? Like 20,000, was it?
Yeah, about 200,000.
Just the personals?
Well, the personals, that didn't happen.
They didn't take it away yet, but they're still talking about it.
No, that's inflation.
Yeah.
Subject to a vote of the people, and that there is a reduction that's going into effect. I think this year, to start out for properties that are less than $40,000, I want to say, and I'm trying to remember that.
$40,000 is correct, and then we're getting the numbers. We had them for 2012.
Right.
We're preparing the numbers for 2013. So.
I believe that number is supposed to double this year to properties below $80,000, or up to $80,000 are supposed to be exempt from that. And then there's an election that's supposed to happen. I believe it's August of 14, where they put this matter on the ballot, and then the real implications start to take place at that point.
Okay. So that will lower
revenue.
What we have.
Yeah, revenue, sure.
Yeah.
But
sure.
There's also been some discussion coming out of Lansing a little bit that maybe that's a subject for more legislation in this coming year, so there may be some more changes up put on that. I'm not sure.
Okay.
Somewhere in your report, you made a comment that $4.8 million of the $6.8 million total cash that's sitting, you know, in banks, most of that, all except the 2.2, is, you know, restricted for operations and for different obligations that are out there. But is there any suggestions? I mean, as far as how, you know, to protect ourselves any better than what we're doing?
Okay, so we're talking about FDIC coverage for your bank investments, yeah. One of the things that happened at the end of December 2012, they changed the coverage rules again. Up to that point, if you had your primary big savings account and something that was a checking account that didn't earn any interest, they insured you up to about almost any limit. So if you had more than 250 grand, if you had $1 million, they insured that much, or $2 million. The rule changed January 1st. Now they dropped it down back to 250,000. So you get 250 grand per bank, basically for what's interest bearing. And then you get another $250,000 for that's not interest bearing. So you guys have about, with everything, I think you've got around $2 million insurance coverage. And that also is kind of like what the commission considers whatever risks they can live with. On the other hand, it's kind of hard to do business with several different banks to make sure you've got enough of the money spread to make sure that you're getting enough of the $250,000 for each type of account from different places to have it insured.
Why is that hard?
Because then the administration is doing all these banking with all, maybe 20 banks and doing all these bank reconciliations and keeping track of all that. An option is there's the CDARS program with CDs that some banks have, where if you're doing, and maybe your local banks already have that, where they can take the money and they do business with other banks and they basically have a pool of these CDs where they can take the money and it's in CDs of other banks, and that allows you to get more coverage.
So it's an overnight funds with the other banks?
Yeah, and they're different term CDs, basically. Mm-hmm. So you're still doing business with your local bank, but because they're in the program, they can spread it to other banks and get you more coverage.
And what did you call this program?
It's called CDARS. It's an acronym. It's CDARS.
Are you familiar with that, Cindy?
It wasn't something that we really needed to do. We need to look at that now. Right now, we're banking with 7 different banks.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's it could be kind of the cost benefit type of thing. Whether it's worth maximizing your insurance coverage. There's no law or rule that says you got to have everything 100% insured. But you kind of look at what kind of risk you guys can live with. I remember when I was in a township like 5 years ago, back before the economy got really bad, and somebody said, "Don't you think we need to worry about this?" I was like, "That's like things are ever going to get that bad again." They did, So I think the CDARS program is definitely a good thing. There's other, you talk to your bank. There's other things they can do. I think they can collateralize the money with legal investments, like maybe treasury bonds, U.S. treasury bonds and these things, so they can give you a little bit more security with those things as well. So there's other ways to cover.
How much do we have uninsured then? You said we had about $2 million
covered. Yeah, about $6 million in the bank. So you have $2 million covered. So
two-thirds of our assets are unprotected.
Right.
Let me rephrase it again.
That's correct.
Two-thirds of our investments are unprotected.
Yeah. Uninsured.
Uninsured.
That was quote-unquote, and I bet it's somewhere.
Yeah.
It's a required disclosure from the GASB that does disclose what it is.
So government shutdown is...
Yeah, you wouldn't get FDIC anyway, I guess. So.
Cost you bank failures. And then what?
Yeah, exactly.
Something else FDIC does for you, too, I learned at a city a few years ago, is if anybody does electronic banking fraud on you and steals from you, like that a city that those Nigerian bank guys got into their checking account somehow and took out $50,000.
Oh, wow.
And it was too late. They couldn't get it back from them. FDIC reimburses the city for that if somebody steals from you.
Wow.
I was just for bank failure and things.
Yeah. Wow, that's good to know.
We need to strongly put it that I understand it may increase the workload, but you know, leaving that much of our citizens' money, I'm not sure.
I think we'd have to review our own personal, you know, investing policy, because I think it's quite restrictive as it is right now as far as what we can do with these funds. But that'd be a workshop for another day, but it's just creating awareness at this point that it's out there, and we're certainly cognizant of it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, everybody's taking it a bit more seriously the last this last decade. I think before that, people probably wouldn't really even worry about it as much, but things have happened.
The FDIC goes down, we have more to worry about than just our money being covered.
Yeah, very true. So, any further questions for Mr. Houghton? Thank you very much, Ken.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would add, too, if you think of anything later, have any other questions, I think, you know, Sonic and Mike can give you our email, phone number, fax, or whatever. We can, anything else we can talk about later, it's fine, too.
I do have one other quick. Are we in full compliance with all the GASB reporting and accounting requirements?
Yep, for right now, yes.
Okay.
They did a whole bunch of new ones
coming up.
There that are coming up. They're phasing in 2014 and later, but relating to pensions and some other things. So there's going to be some new ones down the road.
But for right now, we're fully
good.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Okay. City manager has a question.
Hi.
Ken mentioned at the beginning, he thanked me and Cindy for the work on the audit. Really, the credit goes to Cindy and Michelle with regards to the work that they've done. We got a lot of support from the rest of the staff, but they were key with regards to it. I think it's also important for the commission to be aware that this is the fifth year, of this firm's auditing services for our community. We're at the end of our contract. It'll be time for going out for proposals again, so that'll be something we'll be looking at as we go forward in the months ahead and bring some recommendations to the commission on that as well, too. So, and I just wanted to point out for everybody, the complete audit is available online, available at the library. We have extra copies here if people want to take a look at it. And as Ken mentioned, if anybody has any questions, because there's a lot of information in here, don't hesitate to let Cindy or I, or if you want to go directly to Ken, I'll be glad to provide that contact information.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good night.
Have a safe journey home. Our next item of business is the marina dredging bids. Consideration to award a dredging bid to the recommended bidder. Bids are to be open at 2 p.m. October 8th. Will be reviewed for recommendation at the 7 p.m. meeting. And Barb?
Thank you. We did have our bid opening at 2 o'clock. At your place setting, I provided a bid recommendation and bid tabulation calculated from this afternoon. The low bidder was Rigel Marine Construction. He was one of four bidders. They're a reputable company. The bid came in actually lower than the engineer's original estimate, so we're pretty excited with that. This recommendation also goes to the DNR, and we're working with State Waterways Funds for their approval as well. But tonight before you, we have a recommendation to award this contract contingent on DNR approval as well. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Barb. Do we have any staff comments or department comments?
I was going to ask Barb if she could kind of speak to the timing of this matter, or if the commission cared to make a decision on it today, what type of timing we might be looking at, or if Rival indicated anything with regards to that when we met with them.
Absolutely. With our permit that we received from the DEQ, our window of opportunity from dredging is from the time the permit was approved to November 1. And then there's a no dredge from November 1 until ice off, which could be March, April, or as late as May. And then there's no dredging after May 15th through July 15th.
Wow.
So the window of opportunity, both this fall and the spring, is pretty small. In speaking with Riva, they're ready to go. They have their equipment up in, I believe, St. Ignace right now. And they're looking at the weather, thinking if the weather's good over the next few days, hoping that all these approvals go through, they're going to start floating their equipment down this way, and they would be ready to go as soon as the contract is awarded. We've also had some discussions with the DEQ about possibly relaxing that November 1 cutoff date. Because of the way that the dredging project is going to go, they have to put down what's called turbidity curtain to kind of contain the area. The November 1 cutoff is supposed, from what I understand, some critical spawning time. So once that curtain is down, the fish wouldn't be able to come into that area anyways to spawn. So we don't feel that we would be hindering that process. The DEQ has said they will consider it. They haven't gotten back with us as of yet with an answer. But Riva said that they feel that they could still get it done. The timing would be tight. They would be looking at some Saturdays, some possible 8 hours, but they were pretty confident that they could get everything out of the water that we had to try that number.
Thank you, Barb. Do we have any additional staff or department head comments? Do we have any citizens' comments? Okay, we'll move to commission for discussion. Gene, would you like to start?
Oh, that's a pretty tight window. The work needs to be done. I think we need to move forward with this. I had my question, Barb had answered them earlier.
Okay. Tom?
I agree with Gene.
Okay. Derek?
Thanks, Mayor. Zerf fee change, or if they have to move their equipment, if they don't finish and they move it back to their storage area and then come back in the spring when they can redo it again, obviously their expenses to move that equipment up and down go up. Is that built in, and will that be an incentive for them to work long days to avoid that up back and forth?
It's their intent to get the job done. Their bid is a not to exceed. If they incur extra costs, they certainly can come back to us with a change order that we could or could not approve. That would just be something we have to deal
extra
with.
Extra costs due to their inability to get it done, or just what they discover in the water?
Either. I mean, they could come back, and then it would come back to the commission for your approval or not, based on whatever information they provide. But it's their intent to get it done and get out of here.
That'd be my intent, to not pay them any extra to make a trip up and back.
And they understand that.
Have we talked to any communities that have had Rabbit Marine, you said reputable, have you contacted recent communities that have had their dredging work done to see how their operations were and the efficacy of their program?
I have not as of yet. Okay. Abby Marsh has worked with them in the past, so they were familiar with the company.
Did we list the other grant prices already? I know it's on the form there. Okay, yeah, the final screen. Range from the low bid of $159,000 up to $191,000, and engineer's estimate was $174,000. So they came in at $15,000 under that cost. So is that the kind of an off-topic question? There's a large backhoe and a floating pier, whatever, down by our boat ramp. What was that
related? That's for work, dredging work that's going to be done at the harbor.
Okay, so that's another vendor that's
that they're using right now. That's okay. Actually Shoreline Marine Construction.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Right, that's what that is.
The harbor or the landing?
The landing.
Landing.
Mm-hmm. So that's what that big hole is? That,
yes.
Wow. Is that where they're going to offload the stuff that they dredge?
I don't know.
Let's see, Doug.
Doug's.
That's an affirmative. Yeah.
Okay. Mm. All right. Well, this has been seems like a drag down for a long time, and it's been waiting on other entities and so forth. So, and I'm hoping with this amount here that we can get everything done that was in the initial diagram on areas that we wanted to get to. Barb, you have any comment on that? You said depending on how much our grant was and how much...
This is based on approximately 3,000 cubic yards, which is what our grant was based on. Right. We were concerned that this number would come in higher and we wouldn't have enough funds, but with waterways upping what they were going to...
Sure.
Provide and the bits coming in lower
were
in good shape.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That's the only question I have there.
Laura?
I think most of my questions have been asked and answered. I would say if we can move forward and get it done by November 1st of this year, we'd be best off to do that, definitely. So if they're ready to go and they're a reputable company and they can get here and do it. You know, get it accomplished. I don't know how many days it's going to take them to do it, but I suppose the sooner they can start, the better. Yeah. So, okay, that's about all. Yeah.
Excuse me.
Oh, that's all right. No, that's fine.
Sorry. Call for a motion from the commission.
I'll make the motion for consideration to award the bid of $159,965 to buy a marine construction company and authorize the city manager to execute the required documents.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Sansom.
Aye.
Tone.
Aye.
Gaynor.
Aye.
Grunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Next item of business is the dump truck. Consideration to award contracts for the purchase of a 2014 International Cab and Chassis to Zarima Equipment Company of Gaylord in the amount of $74,518. And two, the purchase and installation of a dump box system, underbody blade, hydraulic, and control system to Truck and Trailer Specialties in Boyne Falls in the amount of $42,303 for a total of $116,821.28, and authorize city manager to sign the required documents. Andy?
Well, thanks, sir. You pretty much summed it all up for me in a nutshell right there.
Well,
the truck we're looking to replace is our 2000 Sterling. It's the oldest one in the fleet. It's got a pretty good truck. It's got about 80-some thousand miles on it and about 7,900 hours of runtime on the chassis itself. It's getting pretty rough. The box is getting really bad. The kingpins on the front suspension are about half, don't need to be replaced. We've had some driveline issues with this piece of equipment over the past. And you know, it's 13 years old. It used to be the city replacer trucks every 10 years, the big dump trucks. But you know, we've gone to a little bit heavier duty truck.
and they seem to be holding up a lot better for us. You know, the price difference was, at the time we started going there, wasn't that great. The truck that I specified, the International 7400, is the same as the other three trucks we currently have in our fleet. They've been really good pieces of equipment. The oldest being a 2004 model year. And the bid specs for the dump box and underbody equipment, we also included this year for the first time, or this purchase for the first time, going to a stainless box on these trucks. We did that the last time with our one-ton truck replacement. And like that one, we should be able to use this one on a couple different chassis down the line, so that'll be a cost savings down the road, I believe, over the next couple of truck purchases. We do already have a stainless steel larger truck box, but it's our dedicated sander. It's the old sander you see running around town, the ones painted red. And that one, that box has been on three different chassis. So, and it looks like it could, with some minor repairs, go on a fourth truck at some point in the future. Inside. So, anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, Andy.
You're
welcome. Do we have any comments from staff or department heads? Do we have any comments or questions by citizens in the audience? Okay, we'll move to commission for discussion. Derek, would you like to start, please?
Thanks, Mayor. Fleet management's extremely important. If it's not maintained and kept up in a timely fashion, then your costs will increase exponentially at the wrong time. I do think it's wise to go with the stainless steel equipment. As Andy's indicated, we have verification that the salt sandbox is, you know, lasted over three chassis and go to a fourth. And obviously there's a premium with stainless steel. I think everybody realizes that. However, at the end of the day, how many steel boxes, regular carbon steel, you know, and look at the cost of what you're going to pay for that, and you will exceed the cost of the one stainless box. There's no doubt about it. I don't have specific numbers, but I'm pretty confident in that. Looks like the bids that went out, and we had bids on the truck from Sarimba's. Mm-hmm. Was there another vendor that bid on the truck?
On chassis itself?
No. Yeah.
We only received one
bid. One bid on that, okay. And then on the underbody equipment, the plow and the box, truck and trailer, were they the one responding on that as well?
That's correct.
Okay. Important to get out there, everybody's aware that it wasn't just a no bid selection, there was that opportunity.
Well, they were both advertised, and I contacted a couple other companies. We do the equipment, the underbody equipment, and they're too far away, they said they couldn't compete.
Their cost came at you. I mean, we truck and trailer right in our backyard. It's kind of a luxury if you're in the heavy equipment industry to have them here and see what kind of the prices are. You know, obviously, citizens see new, when they see new equipment, they see their tax dollars at work, and they expect that the equipment is going to be maintained properly and the, you know, maximum usage and lifespan out of that equipment. And I think that is a fair request and requirement from the citizens. So I looked at the numbers. Again, we've gone beyond the 10-year historical, you know, try to stretch things out a little bit longer. At this point, I'm supportive of the transition to the new rig.
Thank you, Derek. Lauren?
We'll have this in time for this winter, I assume.
Well, winter might be the start last before we finally get it, but it'll be here.
Okay. And what will we do with the old truck? Sell it?
Yeah, we're going to sell it.
Okay, so that's not any
that's
part of this,
this
right? Okay, so yeah, that'll be something that'll come back as an additional
bonus.
Fund back. Okay,
all right.
We've discussed this thoroughly back at budget time, and it's in the budget, and I agree with Laura and Derek. Full support.
Jane? The purchase amount, I've gone over this, and it says under the budgeted amount allotted by about $43,000, so I'm in full support.
I'm also in full support, and call for a motion from the commission.
Make a motion that the city commission award contracts for, one, the purchase of a 2014 International Cabin Chassis to Zaremba Equipment of Gaylord in the amount of $74,518.28, and two, the purchase and installation of the dump box system, underbody blade, hydraulic and control systems to Truck and Trailer Specialties of Boyne Falls in the amount of $42,303.00, for a total of $116,821.28. And authorize the city manager to sign the required documents. Funds for this purchase were included in this fiscal year's motor pool bundle.
I'll second. Roll call.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylord?
Aye.
French?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, our next item of business is tree trimming and removal bids. Consideration award the bid for tree trimming and removal service for this year to Alan Jim's Tree Service in the amount of $15,624, and authorize city manager to execute the required documents. Andy?
Thank you, Mayor. The commission should have my memo on this. So bids were advertised and received for our tree trimming and removal needs for the year. This year we're only going to do 32 trees. I think we've gotten to the point now where we're catching up with things. We had a couple of years where we had a whole lot of bad trees that needed to be taken out. This year we're down to about 36 and 6 trims. And like I said, this is going to be a good year for us as far as removals go. But it was bid out. We had three bids come in, the lowest being Alan Jim's Tree Service of Harbor Springs. That's my recommendation that we award this project to them. Thank you.
Thank you, Andy. Any comments from department heads or staff? Citizens' comments. Okay, we'll move to board for discussion. Laura, would you like to start?
As usual, I would like to have a list of those particular trees.
We
took a real hit this year with consumers. Already, I think we lost, 120 some trees through them. So I would be real concerned as to which trees and where in the community these are.
I'll have it in your mailbox tomorrow.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Here at City Hall. Okay, I'll pick it up. Okay, thanks.
Derek?
Thank you. Alan Jim's came in, it'll take about $8,000 less than the next lowest bid. So clearly they are fantastic value compared to the other two. As far as the actual what gets trimmed, I'm going to refer to our expert on the commission, Commissioner Sansom, on that. And when it comes to trimming trees, I was recently doing some tree trimming on my own property. And
I noticed.
I was feeling really good about opening it up and so forth until I saw Commissioner Sansom drive by slow and look at me.
Several times.
I thought I was about to get scolded. I thought, oh.
I almost did.
Should have checked the schedule of Glenn's before I started the project.
I was off that day. I could have stopped. I didn't. I went by a few times though.
So, okay. I'm in support of the budget amount there for Alan Jim's.
Thank you. Jane?
It's hard to follow that. I agree with Derek. They are the low bid, and they've done a lot of work for the city, so I support the recommendation.
Huh? I support the recommendation. It's the process of getting rid of 32 dead trees, and our next item on the agenda is add 48 trees. So that's.
Oh, I know.
Okay.
I caught that.
I'm also in support of the what's presented to us from Allen Gems, and call for a motion from the commission.
I make the motion for consideration to award the bid for tree trimming and removal services for this year to Allen Gems Tree Service in the amount of $15,624, and authorize the city manager to execute the required documents.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Gaylord.
Aye.
Crunch.
Aye.
Needhammer.
Aye.
Sansom.
Aye.
Town.
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, next item of business is tree planting bids. Consideration to approve a contract with Robinson Landscape and Nursery of Boyne City in the amount not to exceed $10,160 and authorize city manager to execute the necessary documents. And Andy?
Thank you, Mayor. Thanks, Commissioner Niedhammer, for ruining my segue into the tree planting for Commissioner Sansom. It is that time of the year again, too. We advertised bids for some tree plantings for this year. We've got 48 full of trees we want to plant. And this is also going to be the first year that we plant the species that we identified as being safe or under power lines. And we have a total of 14 of them going in at this point. I think the pricing is good. Robinson has been our vendor for the past 5 or 6 years for this project. He's always been a little bitter, and his trees are always very good. So if anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you, Andy. Department head or staff comments? Citizen comments? Okay, we'll move to the commission for discussion. Laura, would you like to start again, please?
Sure. I'm very pleased to see the trees going in. I guess 48 is a fairly good number, and I'm really glad to see we're going to try the Juneberry and Nannyberry and other species, which will probably add a nice variety visually, but also be better for the future, so that we don't have to worry about power companies coming in and whacking them down again. So I'm in favor of that. The only question I have, Andy, is the $1,000 amount from consumers, is this 48 part of that, or no. Is that in addition to?
That's in addition to that. That was a separate bid from Consumers Energy that we're funding.
Right. Okay, so that's 10 more trees than the 48 then.
That's 10 more than the 48.
Right. Okay, so it's really 58. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, sounds good. And then do we have specific locations where these are going in yet?
Yeah, these are all citizen requests.
Okay. All right, real good, because I've had a lot of citizens ask me lately if they're going to get one or not, and I said I'm not sure how many trees we're doing, but check with you or City Hall.
City Hall.
Yeah, that's what I told them. Yeah. Okay. All right, thanks.
Derek?
Thank you. The trees we talked about planting along 75 by the high school there in that area, is that the consumer's amount?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's the 10.
I knew I'd heard that. Okay.
And Andy's had those staked already, correct?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay. We're going to have to do a few adjustments on some of those locations. But,
Okay.
Visual instruction mainly to make sure there's no
one. And while there's actually one area we've got a little utility issue, we need to slide over a little bit to deal with the underground utility issue.
Okay.
Good.
As far as Robinson, they were the only bid. And it would be interesting to see how the new species and trees look moving forward. And obviously, based on the description of them, looks like there's not going to be a power line issue there. So.
And we went to the little taller variety of each one.
Right. We
could have got some like, 2 foot shorter ones for, you know, it's like $20 difference. It's like, no, let's go with taller ones that look better and quicker. And
If I might add, the Juneberry and Nannyberry trees are both flowering trees in the spring, so it should add a little bit of a different element and look.
Excellent. That's going to be exciting.
Yeah, so it might feel really quite nice.
All right. That's all I have, Mayor. Thank you.
Okay. Jane?
No, I also like the choice of what you picked on the overhead lines are. would have liked to spend a little bit to come back, but I'm okay with the recommendation. Tom? I'm also in support and call for a motion from the commission.
Okay. I move that that we approve the contract with Robinson's Landscape and Nursery of Boyne City in the amount not to exceed $10,160 and authorize the city manager to sign the necessary documents.
Second. Roll call.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay, next item of business is Consumers Energy Streetlights. Consideration to approve the resolution authorizing the street lighting contract with Consumers Energy Company for a one-year agreement that renews annually and authorize city manager to execute the document.
Consumers Energy was in here last year doing an audit on our lights. They found that they had more lights recorded than were currently in effect. This amends that as well and reduces our costs overall. One of the things that I tried to see if we could get included in here was an amendment to Section 7A of their agreement. I think it's here. Hang on a sec. Yeah. And this was the section I was looking at to see if we could get some provision put in there where, instead of saying no matter how long a piece of equipment or a street light's in place, we have to pay to have it removed, to have it something, because we pay to have them installed. And then if we ever want to have a street light removed or retired, we have to pay to have that done as well too. I was looking to see if they would put in some type of provision where after 10 or 15 years, they would have recaptured their costs on it and taken that out. And I went on the internet and checked with other communities that had the same thing take place. One of them happened to be the community of Flint, where they have an emergency manager, and I figured they'd be real strict, and they adopted this exact same language. Consumers Energy tells me that they will not modify this language, that they've not modified it any place else. It's not language I'm happy with, but I don't see a way around it at this point. I checked with this, everybody that I could. I put something out on my manager's listserv to see if anybody's found a way to do it, and nobody's come up with anything yet. So I wanted to give us as much flexibility as we could. At this point, that doesn't seem like there's a way to do it. But I wanted to let the commission know that one of my concerns and what we've tried to do with regards to it. Also, even though it isn't so much related to this, I want to make sure the commission's aware that, and we've talked about it before, that per the federal government, mercury halide lamps are no longer being manufactured and used or brought into the country. So a lot of the lights that we have around town are the bluer lights, which are on their consumers' overhead poles, are the mercury vapor. Sorry, I said mercury halide. Metal halide. That's another option. And consumers is going to be replacing those as their inventory of parts for the mercury vapor run out to high pressure sodium as their standard fallback position, which is the orange lights that we used to have downtown. Very bad color retention options on that. So we're trying to get prices from consumers so we can bring them back to the commission to say, okay, here's what it would cost to put in LED options. Because consumers now has that as an optional available. They still call it experimental equipment, and I believe they charge more for it. And also metal halide, which is similar to what we have currently downtown on the majority of our lights. They have that as not quite as a cost-effective option as high-pressure sodium, but it might be something we want to take a look at. But there is going to be a significant change. So they've tried to come in here a few times during my tenure and switch us out to high-pressure sodium. You'll see a few around town, but not too many. Mm-hmm. Most of them are the blue and are my concern is that it really leave a different impression coming into town. Yeah. So that isn't really related. Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of related because of the streetlight contract. But approval of this contract really doesn't change that one way or the other. So we are looking at the LED and the metal halide and trying to get some cost for the commission on those options. So, with the reservations, it's our recommendation that the City Commission approve this agreement.
Thank you, Mike. Any comments from department heads or staff? Citizens' comments. Mr. Harwell.
Yes, if it was delayed a while, Mike looked further into what he was looking into in Flint and so on, where they don't charge you to take out a light. If you had more time, you would be able to.
No, I've been looking at this for several months, I think. I don't know of any new avenues that I can go on. I talked to the Michigan Municipal League. I put it on my manager's listserv. I tried to find all the other contracts if somebody else has done with them. I got several from other communities that had the exact same language as ours. And I talked to them directly, consumers, and said, can we change this? And they basically said no, which it's always everybody's first response, but I haven't found anything that they've made a change anywhere else yet.
But let's look at that other company then, if consumers isn't going to do it. Oh, wait. There is one other company.
Right.
That's part of my frustration as well, too. And again, they charge you an exit fee for each street light that you're going to take down. Which is one of the reasons...
That would be dust tax, almost.
Yeah. Yeah.
This will never end.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. We'll move to the commission for discussion. Tom, do you want to start?
I think just for the record, 205 lights, I think about 18,000 a year. Do I remember that in the budget?
Oh, no, it's more than that. I want to say we're about 50 or 60, somewhere in that range of the lights.
Yes, I'm in favor.
Jane?
Well, being it's just a one-year contract, I'm okay with the recommendation.
Derek?
Well, I would like to look at the other company, but I don't have another one to look at, so I guess we're stuck with consumers. And for the record, I don't like the orange lights.
They don't.
At all. Okay, thank you.
Laura?
Well, Derek, you summed it up. I don't think we have any other choice, and I don't like the orange-yellow lights either. So, okay.
Okay. Call for a motion from the commission.
I make a motion to approve the resolution authorizing the street lighting contract with Consumers Energy Company for a one-year agreement that renews annually and authorize the city manager to execute the second.
I'll second.
Roll call.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Next item of business is dog park consideration. Recommendations of the Parks and Recreation Board to establish a dog park and direct staff to work with Citizens Committee to work out specific details, bring back to the City Commission for further review and possible approval of a future meeting. And wave hand in your hand on that case.
Thank you, Mayor. We've had some interest in establishing a dog park or dog park here in town. It's going to be a park park. Dog park.
Yeah.
And originally there was some interest in a couple different locations. One was at the 1910 building site, the major players, the major interest sites, and two at Avalanche. Also, we looked at Rotary Park, discussed that a little bit. Sunset Park was discussed. But we keep coming back to Avalanche. At Avalanche, there was two areas. The old hockey rink was one area that sits across from the existing warming house. But this other area that's personally my favorite is this little red-shaped pie area, which would be just to the east of the access road that runs up to the reservoir. It's quite a nice area. Tom Neenhammer's been out there a few times. He's been to a couple of meetings and talked about this with us. I think it's a nice area. The nice thing about this spot is we have close proximities to facilities that are needed. There's restrooms close by. There's water close by we can bring in to set up for the park, but also off to the farther to the west, we have an area of possible expansion if we decided to, or enhancement. This is a very popular thing, which I'm feeling is going to be. You know, we may want to enhance it and have a more open, totally wooded area for the dogs to play in, or whatever. You know, whatever happens to be things that can be suggested or whatever. But I think this is something that, that bears looking at. There's a committee, ad hoc type citizens committee, that's trying to get together right now to help with some funding situations for this. And I think it behooves us to let them do their thing and work with staff and see what we come up with to make this happen.
Thank you, Andy. Mike?
It, as noted in Andy's memo, the item was before the City Commission tonight, kind of broached the subject a little bit firmer, see if, and then potentially the recommendation is to have it come back at a future City Commission meeting, possibly the next one. The citizens group would also be looking at fundraising to make this a possibility, kind of like we've done with other projects in the community. We've offered our services if they wanted to use us as a fiduciary. But we've done things like this with the community playground adjacent to us in Veterans Park. We've worked with outside groups like the Veterans Memorial Committee, or the Senior Center as well, too. And usually the first thing that they want to firm up on is location to make it concrete. We did that a few years ago. Also with the skate park project, the commission dedicated or allocated a spot for that. That project didn't end up going forward. And then after a few years of the money sitting in the accounts, the commission, after hearing from people that helped raise the money, allocated it to another project as well. So it's a tool we've used in the past. We want to make sure with regards to Avalanche and also the dog park that the public had enough opportunity to comment and to take a look at this and get us their thoughts on it, that we would introduce it tonight and then bring it back in a future one for further discussion.
Thank you, Mike.
Welcome.
Do we have any further comments from department heads? Do we have any citizen comments?
Andy, will that, the triangular piece, will that, I assume, be fenced in?
Yes.
Is that going to hinder the kids sledding on the hill in any fashion?
No, not in that location. Typically, in the wintertime, you see that area looks kind of bare just to the right of that red line. Mm-hmm. That's the basic footpath that runs from the park, or from the parking area up to the steps that go up to the top of the hill. Pretty much, the sledding stays well to the left, or yeah, the east of that area right there. Heading down more towards the center set of pine trees and the warming house type area. I don't really foresee that coming.
But these saucers and toboggans that they use that they can't steer, are they going to be able to, is it going to be safe for them going down there with a facing the fence?
No, I think so. Where that fence starts, it's right at the edge of the woods anyways. You can see right there at the bottom of the screen. And again, like I said, most of the people, when they're doing their sliding, they're sliding straight down towards basically that center set of pine trees, like put the pointer on there a little earlier. They pretty much run down in that area. And actually, I'm more concerned about ice skating rink than anything else over there, because a lot of times they get pretty close to that, so mm-hmm. they bounce off the snow banks on them. So, thanks.
Any additional citizens' comments? Jim?
Thank you, Mayor. Jim Bowden with the Blaine Area Chamber. I went to the last Citizens Committee and just kind of sat in on a few things. I've been to a lot of dog parks. I've got four dogs, and I've been to a lot of dog parks in other cities, and they're really popular. I think people actually clean up after their dogs pretty well in these kind of situations, and I think they've got a good spot picked out. With the possible expansion over to the west in the future. And I just put something on Facebook about 6 o'clock tonight. I said, this is on the agenda tonight, what do you think? And there were 18 comments, all but one were positive. One person said it was too expensive, which I think is probably not much of an issue if the committee raises all or most of the money for this. And everybody was saying things like, awesome, terrific, do it now. One person said instead of a like button, you should have a love button, and I would use that on this issue. So it was near unanimous. I think people will think this is a great thing for the community. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim. Any additional comments from citizens? Mike.
I just want to let you know, one of the things that the committee was talking about is we've had concerns expressed by people that have gone to Avalanche in the past. Most of our parks are open to dogs unless there's a special event going on. They keep them on a leash. But it seems like at least a couple times a year, even though it wasn't this year, in the past I've gotten complaints from people that are either walking in Avalanche themselves or they're walking their dog on a leash, and somebody comes in with a dog that just is running loose or something like that, and somebody's either way behind them or they never see anybody. And we talked about that quite a bit in the subcommittee as we were looking at various locations. And one of the things that we're hoping, and I guess time will tell whether this goes forward and proves out or not, is that by giving a place where a dog can run and people can allow them to kind of have a little bit of freedom off the leash in a fenced area, we're hoping that that'll help curb the problems that we've had in Avalanche in the past. So we've got people going up there with dogs already. By giving them this type of a space or providing, allowing them to provide for it, we're hoping to address a problem that we've had already.
Thank you, Mike. We'll move to the commission for discussion. Tom, would you like to start, please?
Sure. I've been on the subcommittee, and it's we're heading in the right direction. Dog parks are very, very, very popular, and it's a great social event for the owners to get together and let their dogs be in a fenced-in area, which the dogs socialize and the humans socialize. So it meets our goals. I think in there is a more dog-friendly town.
It's pet-friendly.
I can't read it.
Mm-hmm. Is that included bonus?
Exactly. Reptiles, snakes.
And
they don't need as big an area.
It's a tree.
Just a good
tree. Yeah,
they can escape, right?
But this is the process that's taking place is the correct way of doing it. It's going through Parks and Rec, through a group of people that wanted it, and create a subcommittee and create a funding avenue and come to both the parks and the commission for the approval process, and I just think we're on the right track to create one more thing that Boyne City has that other towns around us could not have, another valuable asset that fits into our goals.
Thank you, Tom. Jane?
Yeah, I've been asked several times in the past if there were any plans on the dog parks. I think it's a good idea. I agree with Tom. I would like to see more details on the proposal, especially on the location. But I'm okay with the recommendation.
Derek?
Hey, Mayor. With regards to the possible location, obviously I haven't been on the subcommittee, but the one that jumps right out at me is the location by the 1910 building. Got a lot of houses right there. And to get a bunch of dogs together, run around, playing, we have potential for barking noise. And I don't know if I would want to subject our citizens that live right in that area to that type of thing. I have heard comments over the years of dogs running at large up around Avalanche from nearby, either nearby houses or people that are out walking and decide, well, I'm not in the city anymore or whatever, and off the leash it goes. So I think either the chief could probably give us some numbers, and the county animal control maybe able to give us some more insight on that. But based on all that information, it seems like that would be probably the most sense for the location, just looking at it logically. The gentleman raised a concern about the sledders coming down. That was a valid question and concern. Mm-hmm. And obviously we want to make sure that if something is installed there fencing-wise, that safety is paramount. I do have some questions regarding what would the city's obligation be in totality? Just the allocation of land? Is that what our total obligation is, either financially or materially? And second, let's say I take my little Shih Tzu up there and German Shepherd eats it. Who's liable? City probably. I don't know about dog parks, so these are questions that...
Well, with regards to your dog,
sure.
There's supposed to be what's being proposed, and then this will get into the more details that Gina was asking about. There's going to be a large and a small dog area.
Oh, okay.
So you can separate them from them. I think that the small dog area is going to be closer to the parking lot area here and the other, you know, mixed dogs. So you'll have a choice of whether you want to have your dog mingling with something or want to. That's my understanding.
I didn't see any other lines.
No, they're not at that point. It's just a conceptual thing. It's still being finalized. There was some discussion about some in-kind services from the city, if we need to run a water line over there or maybe do help with some tree clearing or some land work or something of that nature.
Incidental type.
That was kind of the idea, correct, in addition to providing the land and the space for this to actually come. Sure. But.
And, you know, it seems like obviously Mr. Bowman indicated there's some very strongly interested people, and as with any special project, I think the more involved those individuals that are really care about that project get with labor or financial means, fundraising, I think we look at historically projects become more successful over time. You know, as far as like city running a water line or something, I think that would be a fair proposition, just off the top of my head at this point. But yeah, when citizens groups get involved, and I think the pride's there, and you know, the community with little gyms that we got down there, the playground, that whole types of projects definitely more appealing when the people that are really strongly interested take charge in it, versus just being, okay, we're going to pass it and not have anybody involved in maintaining it or, you know, things like that. So, preliminarily, that's my thoughts on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Laura?
I'm going to preface my comments with saying I am in favor, definitely, of a dog park. I'm not sure I like this wedge shape up the front part of Avalanche. I drove up there today and kind of walked around and thought about it. With the footpath going alongside of that area, I mean, there are some people who are sort of afraid of dogs, or might just be, I don't know, kind of conflicting with people who want to be quiet and walk up the trail. And I don't know if that's just the appropriate spot. I know you've probably looked around and whatnot. I kind of like the old ice hockey area, but then that may not be large enough. So I guess my question is this: when you're talking about maybe a possible expansion to the west, how does that interfere with that access road?
It would be a separate fenced area.
Would it? Okay. What? How much area is west of that road on that end? You know, that might maybe be, if you moved it over, then you wouldn't have to worry about kids coming down the hill and stuff. It would be off, far enough off to the side.
There's actually a little bit of a berm to the east of where that fence is located, where it kind of goes uphill through that fence
I just wonder if it was moved over, if that would be a little further away from...
Well, we'd have to take out a whole lot more trees to do it.
Yeah.
And as far as the safety... people, it is a proposed 6-foot fence.
Okay, and what kind of fence are you looking
chain
at? A chain link?
Well, you know, probably some plantings in front of it to help.
I was going to say, if there's a more attractive, to me, a chain link fence is not real attractive.
You're talking about a vinyl coated.
Vinyl coated.
Yeah, this would be vinyl coated, so it's not affected by acidic dog urine. But still, I mean, it would be colored green probably, or black, but we still want to do some plantings or something there to help take away from the...
So how much space between the footpath and the fence? I mean, it doesn't look like a lot on the map, but...
There's probably 25, 30 feet there at that biggest opening right there.
Okay.
Not about 15.
Okay.
That's not right next.
Yeah, because to me it just looks like it kind of goes right alongside of that.
Scale it in if they have
to. True. For the general concept of a dog park, I'm in full favor. I mean, I think it's a really needed thing in the community. I was just questioning the location and how it was set up, or if it could, that line could be moved over, if you do plant like a row of shrubs or something aesthetically pleasing so it kind of buffers it between the dogs and the footpath, or maybe somehow move the footpath over a little bit. Yeah.
Mike?
just to let you know, we came up with a pretty comprehensive list of city-owned properties in the city when the committee met to talk about various options. We looked at everything from property out at the airport, Rotary Park, some of our other parks, and we kind of focused on places that currently had restroom and other facilities available to it, so we wouldn't have to try and create those anew. I guess there's no perfect solution with regards to anyone. This was the best one the committee came up with, and I think all the commissioners have a copy of those property maps that we have, and we had one of those out on the table too to make sure that not only were we looking at the ones that were on the list, but anything else that was possible as well. So I'm sure the committee would be open to suggestions. This is the best one that they've come up with so far. And there was discussion with regards to, as Annie's mentioned, with regards to, you know, how to possibly buffer that east edge over time. To try and make it blended in part of the park. But it will be another use of the park. But we went back to the Avalanche Master Plan, and really for this side of the park, the east side, and this forested area over here, which basically this path that comes out to Pleasant, there really isn't much of anything shown. We got the nature trail going up here, and the steps, the lookout, but then most of the park activity is either here or further back in that area where the trails are.
Did anyone also talk about maybe doing a little bit better footpath? Like either, I think we talked about when we were in Manistee, doing some kind of a footpath, but nicer from the parking lot up to the bottom of the steps rather than just the dirt path?
That didn't come up at the dog park meeting.
Okay, but maybe that would be something in a comprehensive plan that might be something to look at. So, I'm done.
Okay. I'm in agreement. There's lots of ways and possible improvements for Avalanche Park. I mean, I've made this statement over the years. We have some really great properties around Boyne City. And a lot of our parks are properties. You look at Peninsula Beach, you look at Sunset, you look at Avalanche. I mean, you got to find that balance of how much you want to develop them, but there's opportunities in most of our facilities. You have to prioritize them.
I also support the recommendation of the Parks and Rec Board for the study and call for a motion from the commission.
What staff was looking for was, you know, to get the commission's initial impressions on it, if you want to have it further for discussion, and if you would be ready to bring it back, you know, possibly at our next meeting on the 22nd.
Okay.
That'll give it enough time for it to get out more in the media and the papers and things of that nature, and hopefully, while it's still fresh, we can get some feedback on it.
Okay.
So do we need a motion, or is the motion in order?
I mean, the commission can if it wants, or if you're failing, just saying if we're okay with doing that, we'll do it.
You can make a motion if you'd like.
It's up to you, Mr. Mayor.
I would like one.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that the commission supports the concept of a dog park at Avalanche Park with details be worked out later with the Parks and Rec Commission and subcommittees.
No, second that.
Roll call.
Can you say your motion again, please?
No.
It seems a little better than what we were discussing. I thought we were just saying for staff versus the full adoption of the official plan, which
I might have been sent to. I think the concept, are we in support of the concept of a dog park?
That would simplify it.
I'm open,
Derek,
to keep it simple.
Yeah, I just, we haven't got full citizen feedback yet. I understand where the direction you're going, but I just want to make sure that we're not being too restrictive at this point or too poignant on a motion that it's a done deal. But we're just encouraging the staff to proceed with
to pursue, I think is what he said.
And then go forward with city or citizen feedback and so forth. That's why I was questioning. We don't need a motion at this point, to be honest.
Pursue the concept, I think, is what
staff to direct staff to
further pursue the concept of the dog.
That I'm right. fine with okay. that. If okay.
I was that. I was thinking that's what I what you said okay. basically.
That's fine. I left out some details, which is
yeah.
Funny.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Roll call.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Gaither?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Motion carried.
Okay. Next item of business is the marina dock repair. Consideration award of bid to Flotation docking systems for the amount not to exceed $13,800 for the repairs of six finger piers and authorized city manager to execute the document.
Our main holding dock at the marina has extended its life expectancy. There are a lot of maintenance issues that have come up in the past and are continuing to come up. We have six finger piers that are in need of what's called reskinning, where they replace the steel on the bottom of them. The flotation itself is still up underneath the dock, so they will still float fine, but they don't sit stable in the water. I contacted both Flotation Docking and Bowman Dock and Lift here in town. Bowman Dock and Lift was not interested in bidding at this time, so Flotation is the only one that submitted a proposal to address these finger piers. They were the original builders of the dock system itself, and they're familiar with the project, and they've reskinned a few for us in the past. When you reskin them, it buys you several more years. There's no guarantee on how long. The ones that you see on this map that are okay, several of those, probably three or four of them, have been reskinned, and they're going on between 3 and 5 years. And still in good condition, at least when it was inspected last year. And then you saw in my memo and some of the supporting documents what the alternatives are. We saw the email exchange between myself and the engineer at Flotation about the main head pier, some of that being gone. He said that as long as our finger piers are in good shape, that helps stabilize that main pier. And with the main pier, because of the width, there's a lot more to it that it can stay more stable in the water versus the narrow finger pier. The repairs are $13,800 versus I asked Flotation to give me an estimate on the replacement of that dock. And without addressing utilities or anything, we're looking at $140,000, which I do not have in the budget. So the recommendation at this time is to address the finger piers, the six that need addressed immediately with Flotation Docking. And if you have any further questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them.
Thank you, Barb. Do we have any department heads or staff that wish to comment in regards to the bid replacement here for the maintenance work? Citizens' comments. Doug?
As an employee at the marina, I'm just about working on them today, and they are definitely in bad shape. They certainly need something. And we do have some of our seasonal people that are not real happy with the condition of the pier they got this summer. So it's definitely something that we need to, they take good money to rent from us in the city each year. So we certainly need to reward them with good docks to our dock to boats at. It's in bad need.
Thank you, Doug. Do we have any additional citizens' comments? Okay, we'll move to the board for discussion. Lauren, would you like to start, please?
I understand that they're in really bad condition and something probably needs to be done. There's no way to buy any time until we can maybe do a whole replacement.
Is buying time until we can do a
replacement. Yeah, I was hoping we could do a replacement quicker than later, but I would be in favor of going forward. Then if this buys us a couple of more years,
at least,
but hopefully we can get a marina expansion and renovation moving forward too.
Expansion, renovation, set the priorities and figure out how we're going to move forward with it overall, so we're not just
piecemealing. We don't want to keep putting money into repairs which I'm in favor of doing something that would be a lot better than just keeping repairing them. But we don't have any other choice at this point. If they need repair, they need repair. So I'm in favor.
Derek?
Thank you. This is a separate issue than the expansion of the shopper's dock and the other issue that was before us that was already approved?
That's correct.
Okay. Was that the other issue? Was that involved the height of some of those piers from the water since the waters receded?
Correct. That addresses what? The fixed piers that are on the break wall.
Okay. Mm-hmm. When is that? That's an off-topic. When is that going to start?
That will go out to bid shortly.
Shortly, okay. Yeah,
we've submitted the bids and specs to the DNR to review, and as soon as they give us the okay, we can put that out to bid for spring.
Mm-hmm. As far as... I read the whole proposal. I think my comments on a future marine expansion are pretty clear. But I also stated that what we already have, we do definitely need to maintain, and even if you build a new one, you still will enter a maintenance phase at some point. So
yeah.
that cycle never ends, no matter what you have. And we've made the investment. This financially, for a lot less than a rebuild, that makes total sense. Get it back to where it's safe and stable, and you know, we've got what, three to five years on the other reskinning, or at least 3 years, so.
Yeah.
The budget, do you have funds in your budget to cover this in addition to the other other items, so.
Yeah.
Again, I'm all in favor of maintaining what we have. Absolutely. Thank you.
Comparing the cost for, you know, dock replacement, reskinning, or repairing, the best course of action is repairing. We do have safety issues here, so I support the recommendation. Tom?
At our public meeting last week, there was a comment made that the safety of the docks, I think it was mostly the motion or the movement that she was referring to. Can we just solve that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Mike?
Another way to take a look at this as well, too, is we're talking about six-finger piers, which have the ability to support up to two boats each. Mm-hmm. So that's a potential 12 slips, and each of those brings in about $2,000 a season, which is $24,000 worth of revenue. So you're investing to make sure that we still have the ability to generate revenue and provide a safe and welcoming environment as well, too. So, I mean, a lot of good questions here. I mean, Barb and I thrashed around about, you know, we hate spending money if we can spend it for something long term, but the $13,000 versus starting at $140,000 plus disposal costs and utilities and that type of stuff, we couldn't find a way to make sense of doing anything else at this point. So,
okay.
Staff's completely in support of this.
I'm also in support of it. And a call from a motion for the from the commission. Make a motion for consideration to award a bid to Flotation Docking Systems for an amount not to exceed $13,800 for the repairs of six-finger piers and authorize the city manager to execute the documents.
I'll second.
Our next item of business is the request.
We need a vote.
Oh, I'm sorry. Trying to get things moving too quick. Okay. Roll call, please.
Town?
Aye.
Gaylor?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Okay, next item of business is the request of the city manager to go into closed session with our attorney regarding attorney-client privilege documents as provided in MCL 15268 of the Michigan Open Meetings Act, Public Act 267 of 1976. But before we make a motion to do that, we're going to cover good of the order and announcements. We will not be coming back here for any further business. First item is good of the order. Laura?
Yeah, Derek reminded me of something that we probably should have brought up under the tree issue. So I thank him for that. And that is, we were looking into a little while ago about the watering bags. And is that something that you've pursued to look into?
I haven't ordered them yet. But I've gotten pricing from Grainger's, and that can get into like 20 some bucks a piece.
So okay. It's not that bad. So we're looking at maybe possibly doing that.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks. Thank you, Derek.
Thank you. A couple things. Just following up with the city manager on Jefferson Street, and we had some more heavy rains up there in the front off the driveway. We spoke about where that was at. Do you have any plans of action at this point?
Not since we spoke last week. No.
Okay. Let me
back up on that. I did talk yesterday to Jim Howell, the supervisor for Evangeline Township, and told him that we had discussed this.
Right.
He brought up another road situation, and I mentioned to him that I conveyed his comments about possibly looking at Jefferson as the first place to go as a joint effort, and he wants to pursue that further, so we're setting up another meeting in regards to that.
Should I go to that meeting if I could, maybe? I'd like to see if we get, something done before the winter, because then we'll be in the spring, you're going to have that, spring rains and runoff, so at least some sort of engineering design abatement technique that before then. When do you think you could have that available between you and whatever other researchers that you have? At least bring those commission some options and see if they're currently budgeted or.
I would think we should be able to do that by the first meeting in November.
Okay.
The commission would like, and we'll have a new commission at that time.
Okay.
So. I'm not sure where Andy would have the materials I talked to you about.
Sure.
Got from the tip of the mid that we will take a look at to see if they had any suggestions that we might want to take a look at.
Okay. Also, the follow up another topic, the mowing of the grass in and around Veterans Park. I know this is a topic near and dear to Andy's heart. Got that beautiful new mower, and yes, I keep getting approached about it, and unfortunately, I can't say, no, look, it's been mowed. Obviously, we're entering the fall and winter season, but I think it's something that for scheduling next year, as far as, when the mowers rotate around, that we mow the whole area around there. So, I was looking at one point when I talked to you, it's noticeably lengthened. So.
Yeah, Andy and I talked about that last week.
Right.
And again, we talked about it yesterday, and I know the crew was out mowing that again, mowing out there today in regards to it. So.
Did they get to mow it the week before, after I talked to you? I don't think so.
I think part was mowed early in the week, and then the other part was mowed later in the week. So I told them, when they're doing that area, just do it all at one time.
I think.
Or as close together as possible.
Sure. So they grow at the same rate.
So they look fairly close.
Right. I agree with your theory there. Probably makes sense. So. Also, lastly, I see they cut the cement, a little bit of that pavement out on the alleyway there to probably zip. Obviously, it looks like you're going to be able to get some cement in that before snow flies.
We're hoping to do that tomorrow, actually.
No kidding. Okay. Well, I appreciate the staff for getting on that project and returning it. And make sure we get the money back from utilities for our work on that.
Just waiting on the final cost.
So, if they give you any trouble, just let me know. I'd be happy to assist with that.
Okay, you got a spot for that? We've got some other little sidewalk projects we're going to do around town, and this is perfect for not being short of what would be in a small spot. So.
Thank you very much. That's all I have here.
Gene?
I don't have anything. Thank you.
Tom? I have one item. It's kind of like a visual obstruction looking northeast corner of Court and Charleville Street. There's a huge shrub or bush there. You have to almost pull into the intersection to look to the north of that. So, yes.
Late last week, the crew was out there. Is it still like that? They were out in that area doing some trimming for visibility issues. Yeah. week that we see, you know, for our trucks and everything.
It's been 4 or 5 days ago that I, you know, made that note to myself, so I appreciate if it is done.
I know they were out in that area, and they haven't completed yet. I mean, as we have extra time, the guys will go out and start clearing some of their truck routes and, you know, plow routes and everything, get the low-hanging branches. But that was one of the guys had a concern about, and he had mentioned it was that corner. So
okay.
If they haven't gotten to you yet, they probably will shortly.
Sounds good. Thank you. Okay. Announcements. The City Commissioner Candidate Forum is scheduled for Monday, October 14th, 2013 at 7 p.m. at the Boyne City District Library. The next regular City Commission meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, October 22nd, 2013 at noon. Trick-or-treat hours will be from 5 to 8 p.m. on Thursday, October 31st. City Hall will be open on Saturday, November 2nd, 2013 from 9 to 2 p.m., 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. to issue and receive absentee ballots. The general election will be Tuesday, November 5th, 2013, and polls will be open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. And at this time, I'll make a motion and we go into closed session.
Second.
Roll call.
Gaylord?
Aye.
Grunch?
Aye.
Needhammer?
Aye.
Sansom?
Aye.
Town?
Aye.
Motion carried.
5 minutes.